This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 365, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Come, they told me, ba-rum-ba-bum-bum, a newborn king to see, ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. Our finest gifts we bring, ba-rum-ba-bum-bum, rum-ba-bum-bum, rum-ba-bum-bum.
Peace on earth, can it be? Years from now, perhaps we'll see.
Hey, happy holidays, and welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 365.com. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hey.
And Josh Flanagan.
Why do you hate Christmas?
I love Christmas.
Happy holidays? That's bullshit.
Well, ever since when I worked in retail, I had a hard time with this saying Merry Christmas to everyone.
You're respectful of people?
Well, because then what happened was I didn't want to say Merry Christmas, and so then I started saying Happy Holidays, but then I started getting all fumbling, so I just didn't say anything, and I waited till they say Happy Holidays and Merry Christmas, and then I go, same to you, and it came off really abrasive, and I didn't sell many very things. So anyway, that's why I got out of retail, and I we got into comics at the website ifanboy.com, which is all about comics. In the celebration of comics, and every week we read a whole bunch of comics that come out, new comics, and one of us goes to their keyboard and writes the pick of the week about the book that got them jazzed the most that week, and then we come here and talk about it as well as the other books that came out and anything else of note or interest. Before we get into the show, just want to warn you that we're going to talk about what happens in the comic books, so we're going to spoil them. So if you haven't read your comics yet, you might want to press pause and come back or come listen later, but still listen. It's worth your while. It's good distraction. This week, Josh had the pick, and I'll let him take it away and explain himself.
Yeah, I know. Ron wants me to be a crowd pleaser. I want to be a crowd pleaser. No, he sent me an email.
I don't even know if that pleases the crowd or not. But anyway, go on. So,
my pick of the week was Conan the Barbarian number 11, and I'm just as surprised as you are. Except I'm not, because I started reading. This is one of those series, and if you're like me. And I don't know if anyone is. Sometimes you'll see a series come out and you think, oh, I should try that, but I probably won't like it after a little while. And such was with Brian Wood's Conan the Barbarian.
I would much rather read Brian Wood's Conan O'Brien, by the way.
I would too. That would be great. And I've read some Conan over the years. I remember there was a Roy Thomas story a little while back. There was a Ron Mars story a little while back. And he's got a pretty long, exciting history in comics. I think the movies came about because the comics in the 70s were pretty successful.
Didn't Kurt Busiek have a run on it? Yeah,
him too. That's right. And, you know, the classic sort of, I think was it John Buscema who was doing them for a while?
Yeah.
So anyway, I like them, but I sort of like a bit of them. And then you know, like after a while, I go, okay, that's enough of that. And the thing that's really kept me around for these Conan books is that Brian Wood, he developed a real trick for doing these sorts of, I keep wanting to say Swords and Sandals, but I don't like that, although I guess that's what it is. When he was doing Northlanders, which I also really came to love sort of despite my expectations. And it, as he sort of transitioned from Northlanders, which ended at Vertigo, over to Conan, he really carried, I think, a lot of what he learned at Northlanders. And so it's a very smooth book. It feels very effortless, and it's very, I find it very interesting. And then the other thing that happened is that he brought along some really wonderful artists, a bunch of them that had previously worked on Northlanders as well. Started off with Becky Cloonan on the book, and she lasted 3 or 4 issues. There was a run by James Herron that was really wonderful. There was somebody else in the middle that I don't remember, but the last couple issues have been Declan Shalvey. And these guys are all just excellent storytellers. They're guys who... which is really fun for this book because there are sort of extended action sequences where, you know, there'll be a sword fighter, you know, Conan. It's always the same. Conan breaks out of whatever bond somebody's holding him and kicks 5 guys' asses. And they're really fun to watch how they build those sequences in storytelling. And so from a craft standpoint, I really enjoy reading this book. That's really the thing that I'm like, this is just really, really well done. But I also do find it compelling. I don't know where it's going to go. The overall story is that in the beginning of this series, Conan hooked up with Belit, who's the sort of pirate queen lady, and she's in charge of a ship of really badass sailors, and they tried to take over the ship that Conan was on, and they killed everybody, and he and them got along. So he joined the crew and started up his little relationship with Belit, and everybody on the ship is sick right now. They're all dying except for Conan because he's a badass. And he goes into like this little town trying to get help and then gets in a bunch of fights there. It's not, you know, it's not really extensive plotting. It's not really deep thinking, but it's fun and it's compelling. And I just kind of keep liking it more and more. And as I was reading my books this week, you know, it was the only one. It was one of those things like I didn't read it and go, oh, that's pick of the week. But it was the one when I look back, it was the only one I gave a 5 to. So that's how that became pick of the week. Are either of you guys still reading this at all, or did you?
Never
read it.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you were like a big Brian Wood fan, and I was not a big Brian Wood fan, which I find interesting.
I find myself I'm a Brian Wood fan. I'm not a read everything he writes fan, especially licensed stuff. And I'm not a big Conan fan. Although I do like Becky Cloonan, I like Declan Shalvey. Maybe I should be reading it.
Dave Stewart's coloring all these too.
Of course, that's the other thing. Mike Richards has got him chained to a desk.
He doesn't do everything at Dark Horse.
He's also doing The Massive.
And you know his work actually has a lot to do with it. He adds just as much as anybody else, and the whole thing is sort of everybody's sick, so the whole thing has this sort of sick pallor to it, this sort of pale dullness that's in the background, and It's just a great. It's one of those comics that if you were to take all of the word balloons out of it, like everything, you would still be able to read it. And I think that's you would know the tone and sequence of everything that was going on. And this is sort of a real bummer of an issue, and everybody sort of looks sad, and there's because he doesn't know what to do. And at the end, like the choice is, well, I am the barbarian. Should I just leave all these people and let them die? He's like, I don't know. And he sort of
I am the barbarian.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, he doesn't say that specifically.
Oh, that would have been cool if it was just that self-aware. Like, well, I am a barbarian.
Well, no, yeah, he writes him completely he doesn't write him completely modern, which is a little different than Northlanders because that was the idea with that. He goes a little more into the vernacular, I think, in Conan, but it's just kind
is
of
Is it still
bummer.
Young, headstrong Conan?
Yeah. It's definitely like the young. He's out in the world and he's kicking ass. It's fun. I've just really enjoyed it, and it's super well done. I actually would say you guys should give it a look sometime because I think that you definitely appreciate it and probably enjoy it.
Sounds good.
It was funny because I half expected this to be like a Declan Shalvey kind of praising kind of moment because you're a fan of Shalvey's work.
I definitely am. Yeah. The thing is, like, I really would say that he is of a piece with the other kind. Like, I don't know if I have the language to express how he, you know, like him and the people on this all of the artists have worked together. Not one of them is in terribly different than one another, but it's just very simple's not the right word. Straightforward storytelling. There's not a lot there that doesn't need to be there. It's very clear and from a standpoint of just looking at putting together a comic book and putting together how these panels and pages work together, I think he's really good at it. And it's not necessarily, he's not a guy who's going to blow you away with you're not going to turn to like a two-page spread of some hugely dynamic image and be like, oh my God, he's amazing. It's not a pinup kind of guy. He's a comic book maker kind of guy. And I definitely really like his work on this. It's very similar to the work that they did at the end of Northlanders, which, you know, was great. I think that they hit Shalvey and I forget who split the last arc into two pieces.
Was that Azaceta?
I think it was supposed to be Azaceta.
Azaceta was there towards the end. Yeah, I forget. Oh man, I miss Northlanders.
Yeah, no, it was. Well, that's the thing. I figured if you liked that, then there's almost no reason that you wouldn't like this.
If you like that sort of thing.
No, you did like this. And it's very related. It's very similar to that. Although I dare say that Conan is more relatable. He's more likable than sort of those characters in Northlanders were sort of reprehensible to a man.
Interesting.
Not all of them. There was a lot of synthetic people in Northlanders.
Well, the last like 15 issues or so were about the people on Iceland, and they were all assholes.
Yeah, true.
I think it's just a great little series, and it's one of those things that not everybody will read, but the people who are reading all seem to like it a lot. I think it was averaging something like 4.7 for the issue or something like that. You know, not a huge hit, but just a real good solid comic book. And so it was actually, you know, at the end of the day, it was actually kind of an easy pick. And it was one of those ones where I was like, I've really enjoyed it all along, and I was glad to give it a chance to sort of be the pick of the week.
Cool. Well, that's what pick of the week is all about.
You know, that is.
Sometimes you go for the public opinion, like I did the last time with Avengers. Sometimes it's a controversial one. Sometimes it's a great feat of work. Sometimes it's just a comic that you enjoy.
It's not about throwing meat to the masses.
No, exactly. Yeah.
We're at the point now that if I don't pick Batman, which I know will be 65-75% of the team vote, nobody says anything to me anymore. They leave me alone.
Well, that's the thing is that I feel as if a lot of people put more stock in Pick of the Week than we do. Like it doesn't take away from there are other good books out every week. It's just the book that Josh enjoyed, you know. And so yeah. Anyway, 6 years later, still explaining ourselves.
We're explaining ourselves to ourselves.
True, exactly. So,
let's be honest.
So anyway, moving on to the wonderful world of Marvel Now, and this week's Marvel Now number one launches were all owned by Mr. Dennis Hopeless.
Were they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're both now. They're both written.
Now is Dennis.
Yeah. They're both written by Dennis Hopeless, Avengers Arena number one, and Cable and X-Force number one, and you couldn't get two more different books if you tried. So the hotly debated and argued and maligned Avengers Arena number one with art by Kev Walker came out. I wrote a review of it a couple of weeks ago. I really like the potential of this book. I dug it. I think Kev Walker is great, and I think that you've got a whole slew of C and D listers at best, except for Darkhawk, who's an A lister. And I was in the
wait a minute.
What?
Darkhawk's an A-lister, is that what you said?
Well, they're C and D listers, obviously, everybody else, but Darkhawk's an A-lister. Yeah, totally.
Okay.
But
you can let that one slide?
Sure. Okay. But you see, that's what represents what's interesting about this is because everybody has a favorite character. And just because I'm a Darkhawk fan doesn't mean somebody out there isn't a Chase or a Nico fan from the Runaways or a Metal and what's her name? Hazmat from Avengers, you know, Avengers Academy, or I don't know. I didn't even know who Kid Britain was.
I didn't know any of these characters were.
Yeah. See, so like, why not? And like, someone in the comic book store, we were talking about this, actually had a great comment about this, going, "Yeah, I like a lot of these characters, and if it wasn't for this book, I wouldn't get to read them."
Yeah,
which is a great way to look at it.
For now,
yeah, for now, sure they might die.
Well, let's talk about this. One of the things that I thought was really interesting is that this was a book that people had a visceral reaction to before it existed.
Yes,
which I think is interesting. However, it was exactly what they said it was going to be.
Oh, there's no pretense about this book at all.
Most of those reactions would have been the same before or after. We just dealt with them before anyone had read it. This is a rare case in that sense. I thought this was really well done. Obviously, I'm a big fan of Kev Walker. I think he's an excellent artist. So that's very good. I didn't know anybody or have any
You don't remember the Runaways characters?
I don't think I realized that it was them. I just assumed I didn't know anybody. So, but
or
from
Dark
a standpoint.
Hawk?
I don't really know Darkhawk that well. X-23. I really only.
What, are we even friends?
I know him from the conversations we have, but I pay I can't think of when he's ever shown up in a comic.
I pay no attention to what you say about Darkhawk.
You should go back. You should get that book, that the collection that came out, and read the original Darkhawk because it was fun.
Yeah. Anyway,
don't dismiss. No, okay. Connor, back me up here.
What I'm saying is that it didn't matter that I didn't know any of them. I thought it was a really well-written ensemble piece where I got to know the people who I needed to get to know fairly quickly right away, and I thought that it was very naturalistic in terms of the way that the people –
You don't need to know them.
Totally
encyclopedic history. No more than you need to know who everybody in the Hunger Games was. Just need to know that these kids on an island are going to have to survive. That's all you need to know.
And
if
I
to the table, then that's more for you to enjoy, but otherwise you don't need to.
I thought that the characterization was really well done, and sort of the handling of a large cast in a comic book form, it felt like it rang pretty true to me. And sometimes it can't. Sometimes it feels like this is a stupid adult trying to write kids who don't sound anything like that.
Yeah.
And they felt like real people, I guess. And I liked The Hunger Games. So, you know. I mean, it's horrible, but there's an emotional resonance to it that's certainly something. And it's an interesting sort of thing to think about.
I like the use of arcade in this. I think this is the perfect extension or continuing of that character. Because if you remember, I mean, this is basically what he's doing now is what he did in the 70s and 80s when John Byrne had him put the X-Men in a giant pinball machine and try to kill them. Mm-hmm.
Really he should have done again.
I know. Honestly,
if that happened,
I agree.
We're talking pick of the week territory.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. If there was a giant pinball machine.
Typewriter, pinball machine.
Yep. Yep.
Anything giant.
Yep.
Josh loves giant things.
Yeah. But I think this is great. I'm on board for it. So
the idea of drawing the inside of a giant pinball machine is incredibly appealing.
Yeah. See? So
I liked it. I did enjoy it. I'm going to continue on too.
All right. Cool. Excellent.
It's got to be a limited series, right? I mean,
well, that's why I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, how long are they going to stretch out these 30 days? So the premise, for those who aren't aware
about
the
comic industry.
For those who aren't aware of the premise, the idea is that Arcade has kidnapped 16 C&D Lister characters and put them on a new murder world, which appears to be an island somewhere. And basically, the idea is that they have to survive and only one can be left standing at the end of the 30 days. And
so it's like Highlander.
Yeah, which means that they have to kill each other in order if they want to survive. The book starts out on day 23.
Right.
You know, and then flashes back to when it
day
all
29.
Began. Day 29. Yeah. So we know that Hazmat and X-23 make it to day 29.
Are they the last two, maybe?
I don't know. Maybe. We don't know. We're going to find out. So the question is, how long is it extended? Are the people going to get off? Are they going to add more characters? That's kind of what I love about it. It's like it's such a crazy idea. Where are they going to go with it? Yeah. And I like the little energy meters next to their names. That's pretty cool. But so I don't know. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm on board. I think it's a lot of fun. Conversely, Cable in the X-Force number one was a mess. First off, Salvador La Roca, I haven't read his stuff recently because he was doing Iron Man with Fraction, and I didn't read that. I remember him being great in the early 2000s.
He was.
And this is just like, I it was shocking.
He changed his style completely. We've seen it on Iron Man. It's no good.
Yeah. And then, I like the idea of a Cable-fronted X-Force team.
Isn't that what X-Force, I mean, isn't that?
Yeah, that's what it originally was. And I like seeing Forge and Domino, and I'm not a big fan of Dr. Nemesis, or Dr. Nemesis, as I like to call him. And, of course, a big fan of Colossus. So I like the concept of the team, but somewhat of the premise is that, so Cable, at somewhere along the lines that I forget where, whether it was in X-Sanction or during Avengers vs. X-Men or whatever, but so Cable has been purged of the techno-organic virus. Okay. And so now, as a byproduct of that, he lost his eye. Remember his little glowing eye?
What's he got in there?
An eye patch. Yeah.
Some kind of eye I never heard of.
Some kind of eye. And because of that, his left arm, which was techno-organic bionic arm, is now normal arm. And because it was bionic arm, it's all atrophied and gimpy. And so he has Forge making him a new arm, and it's this awful cliche superhero comics monstrosity of like a bionic arm with little pointy fingers and all this kind of stuff. And I was just like, as I'm reading this, I'm like, this is just not what I want to read ever.
Why would you ask for an arm like that?
Yeah.
You could cut yourself very easily with these fingers.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Or the bathroom becomes a big hazard.
Yeah.
You can't keep pants although for the life of you.
Although if he lifts his arm and makes a fist, they shoot rockets.
Well, I can see the benefit to that.
Yeah.
Yep. Especially sitting in traffic. On the other hand, the trade-off is it's late at night. I'm half asleep. I go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. I use the wrong hand.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's a, well, he can take the arm off. He can take the arm off. So.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. But anyway, but yeah, this was not. I mean, this is not anything I want to read. So I'm not going to stick with this. Surprisingly.
All right.
So.
Demon Knights 15 is the last issue of Paul Cornell's run. And did you guys make it to 15?
No.
Okay. It was good. It really did wrap up their story. It ended in a gigantic battle between three or four different armies, the armies of Hell, the armies of Arthur, the armies of that queen woman, all happening in Valhalla. Not Valhalla, that's Thor, in Avalon. And it ended with, you know, the defeat of the bad guys and the Demon Knights team coming back together. And what you find out is, and it's kind of sad because clearly Paul Cornell, as the writer of Demon Knights and the writer of Stormwatch in the beginning of the New 52, had a plan because at the end they are dubbed the Stormwatch. So clearly this was the, you know, this who's going to tie it
precursor,
together.
Precursor, yeah.
They are the ones who watch for the coming storm. They are the Stormwatch. And so then, you know, if you read these 15 issues that Paul Cornell wrote, it was a great story that went, and there was a little fun little storytelling device where there's this giant battle going on, but the Stormwatch or the Demon Knights team sort of goes off to the side to heal Merlin. And so they intersperse everything that's going on with these little tiny red panels of giant of battle sequences. So you can tell going on through the entire issue that they're surrounded by a giant fight. And you never, like, this guy getting hit with an axe in the face, and there's blood, but it's all interspersed into the conversations that's going on off to the side. So you get nice. The sense that they've never left the battle. Great art from Bernard Chang, and now the next issue jumps ahead 30 years with Robert Venditti of Surrogates taking over as writer. And I'll probably try one issue just to see, because I do like this team. I think they have a great dynamic, and I'm interested to see what happens with a 30-year time jump with the characters. But
go on, Connor. I mean, Josh.
I was going to say, I think what happened was they just said, you know, he was going to be gone, and I was kind of – I was sticking with it, and then I just was – I just – I don't know. I lost momentum with it. I lost steam with it, I think.
He did a full 15-issue story. So
yeah, no, and I realized that.
If you did enjoy this character, which I did.
Yeah.
Here's a question about Robert Venditti. Will he ever not be the guy from the Surrogates?
Yes, he's got something bigger than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how that works. And yeah. You got to remember, that became a Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So what he needs is a Robert Pattinson movie.
There, now you're thinking.
Well, whatever that is. Yeah. Robert Venditti, a Pattinson movie.
Yeah. Anyway, so Walking Dead 105 firmly established that this Negan villain character might be my favorite character of The Walking Dead ever.
He's also Robert Kirkman's favorite character. it's going to be like just six issues of him talking.
Yeah, and not to give anything away, you know, for those who are reading trades, The Walking Dead thing, whatever, but just the way Kirkman writes this guy and the dialogue, and it's just like I can hear it. You know, and it's ballsy and brash, and it's a lot of fun to fucked up and a lot of fun to read.
It is. It's pretty good. I think the thing that was the most fun about this is that I don't know what's going to happen, and it keeps kind of getting worse or more extreme than I expect.
Yep.
What with the harem?
Yeah.
And we don't know what's going to happen to Carl, and you just keep thinking the penny's going to drop, and they just keep not dropping it, which is a thing, by the way, that Kirkman's done many, 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 many times over the course of this series.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. I'm maybe backed out a little bit, but you know, it's a thing. That's his book. It's a character piece. That's the kind of thing you can do in this book. And he's got the latitude to sort of play with it. And one thing is you know, at the end, he's sort of firmly established who that character is and his endless soliloquies.
Yeah. Which are great though. I love them.
Endless soliloquies.
Yeah. Good times. So I, with Winter Soldier number 13, I realized that I'm really going to miss this title.
Yep.
I mean, and it's not even, I mean, Brubaker's telling a good story, but Butch Geis and with this issue drawing Wolverine, Daredevil, Hawkeye, Captain America, like it is a fun Marvel Universe story.
I just like it. I feel like we've unearthed Gene Colan comics from the past.
Right? It's, oh man. Like, this is just so, it's just so, it was such, it's so delightful to look at.
Yeah, it really is.
Also, I think, I mean, the story is a huge part of it. I think this he's dialed into these characters. He's basically using everybody he really likes to write. He's using Captain America and Bucky and Wolverine and Black Widow and Daredevil and he, you know.
One of these guys looks out of place, by the way.
Hawkeye's ridiculously stupid glasses. That are triangle shaped.
How much of skill on both Geist but also Brubaker's part? The scene on the rooftop with Daredevil with the helicopter and the introduction of Cap and Cap, you know, and getting Cap's monologue and him depending on Daredevil, knowing that he's there, like. Mm-hmm. To show how these heroes work together and just kind of click when they, you know, like the pros of the pros, you know, like I thought that was showed a real mastery of the characters and the actions they take.
Yeah. You think that Jordy Belair got the script and was like, oh, so a lot of fucking rain. Yeah. A lot of rain every fucking page. All right. Yeah, yeah. No, fine. Rain. We'll do rain. you know what my favorite thing about this was actually?
What?
I guess the patch era Wolverine.
Yes.
I love it. He looks just like was that Buscema also? Buscema and Claremont, right?
Yeah, that was Buscema. Yep. Yeah.
It looks like that and I love it.
Yep. Yep.
But the hair is, there's no attempt to make the hair look more realistic.
No, yeah, and the sideburns go all the way up to the mouth line, like to the frown lines. Yeah.
That's got that brown jacket on. Yep. I think that's the outfit that he was wearing read the penthouse in. I mean, just it's a great looking Wolverine.
Yeah, and just to clarify, Patch normally wore like a tuxedo because he was a nightclub owner. But I know what you mean. That Wolverine solo series early on. Yeah.
Yeah. No. The head. Basically.
They should bring back Patch. By the way, like the fact that Wolverine would go off to Madripoor and be someone else,
which is weird.
He's weird though. Honest, he would have some really quirks weird. By now.
Yeah. I mean, it's really weird.
It would be like if one of you guys like on the weekends, Josh goes off and his name is Bill.
No, and the thing is that he just put an eye patch on. He still's got the fucking hair and the sideburns that are like, it's, you're clearly Logan. Like, it's just like, it's
fairly well known by now. Like, he's been an Avenger for a while too. Like, so maybe that's why he can't do it.
At least slick your hair back or something. But like, there was just no attempt. And it's not like he hasn't hung out in Madripoor a lot. You know, it's just like, oh, I love it. All right, sorry.
That'll be the next.
I'm just flipping through these pages and looking at them, and they really are wonderful.
Yep.
Except for Hawkeye's glasses.
Yep.
They're awful. Batman 15, The People's Choice, is the next issue in the Death of the Family storyline. This is the issue. It's kind of the bridge between the last part of the story, which is where the Joker makes himself known to Batman, to the next part of the story, in which we will find out the Joker's plan. This is sort of the decompression issue where the family gets together and says, what the hell's going on? Everybody gets mad at Bruce. What I really like about this issue is it does a lot establishing the sort of tone, the dread of the characters. And one thing you can tell, and I think maybe Josh knows this better than anyone, is that when you're a father, like Bruce is the surrogate father to these people and the real father to Damian, the dread comes not from your safety but from their safety. And in this issue – or this story, it's all about the kids being in trouble. So I think that's really where Bruce's game is thrown off, is that he's not worried about himself so much as his kids are the ones that are in danger and the Joker's going after his kids.
And
so
then the other side of that is that they are all coming after him for wanting to know more to be able to help themselves, and he wants them to be safe and not worry about it. So he's taking it all on his shoulders, and he's not telling them anything. He's not talking to them. He's not.
I think it really is Scott Snyder's meditation on being a father. You know, the dangers inherent of it, especially in a lifestyle like this. You know, people wonder why Bruce isn't being more helpful. It's because he's terrified. Mm-hmm. You know, not a lot scares him, but he's got kids and he's a dad. It doesn't, you know, even Batman worries about his kids. So that I really like that part a lot. I love the backup story with the Riddler being introduced. They thankfully discarded the first issue design, which, if you recall from that first issue, when he had a question mark mohawk.
Yeah.
All that one panel in Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
They've gone back to the traditional look here.
I think Jock just is like, I'm not drawing. I'm not drawing.
No. The one thing about this is I think this arc, more than any of the arcs in Batman so far, just show the, like, I feel like this, and I've said it before, I think this is Snyder's shining, like Snyder showing like he's a real writer. You know, like this is written really, really well. My complaint has been like with the last issue and again with this issue is the non-action scenes I feel like Capullo is somewhat rushing through them. I don't feel as if they're as sharp as the earlier stuff. But that said, the action sequences, and specifically the one-page flashback with the Joker blimp,
mm-hmm.
was just beautiful.
There are a lot of Robins.
Yeah, there are a lot of
there
Robins.
There are a lot of Robins.
Maybe, maybe one to two too many.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus Batgirl.
Yep.
Batgirl's fine. She's
I'm just, there was a lot of people standing there demanding answers. It felt like I was reading an Avengers Bendis comic at times.
I wouldn't mind a couple of Robins being lost along the wayside.
Yeah.
By the way, my favorite page of this was in the backup. It was the jock page of all the guards carrying the horse upside down the hallway. I would like very much to own that page.
Yeah. Whatever the Joker's got planned, clearly it's fucked up. He's taken over Arkham Asylum. He's enacting something really bad. He's gathering his forces there, and whatever it is involves a horse.
It's gonna be big. I get a feeling it's gonna be big. So
what? How does the horse fit in? Because here's the thing.
Why can't they just leave the horse?
If they do not address the question of the horse, this could be our new closet.
Yeah, we gotta let's pay attention to it. We're on the horse beat.
Yeah, just watch.
Well, the horse is dead. They shoots the horse. So
there's gonna have to have another horse. They were bringing the horse for something.
Why didn't they just walk it in?
He's insane.
Yeah. Anyway, so if there are any comic book fans in your world or Batman fans, you cannot go wrong with picking up the Batman by Snyder and Capullo for this Christmas. You can give them the nice little hardcover of the first arc. And you can get that at Amazon.com. Holidays are coming. I've finished all my Christmas shopping, and I did it all on Amazon, and I urge you to do the same because it makes it so easy. And you can help iFanboy out in the process. Just go to iFanboy.com/Amazon, click on the big old banner there, or on along the navigation on iFanboy.com under store, you can click the Amazon link right there. And all your purchases go towards helping iFanboy a little out. So might as well kill two birds with one stone. And we thank everybody who's done that so far this holiday season, and we hope that you're not stressing out too much over your presents. It's a festive time of year. So
I got you both that hardcover, the Batman hardcover.
I already have it, Connor.
Well, now you have two.
Yeah. All right.
Why did you buy me two of them? That's weird.
All right, cool. So Amazing Spider-Man number 699.1 was written by Joe Keating, who is a friend of the show, and full disclosure, I have been editing Hell Yeah for him over at Image Comics, but it was interesting to see him write a Marvel comic.
Yeah, it was good.
Did you think so? I thought so.
I did. No, I thought it was pretty good. I feel like obviously this can't be the first time that we've seen a Morbius origin story, but it felt like let's just lay this all out on the ground and start from scratch. And at first I was like, I don't really care, and then by the end I was like, what's gonna happen?
Well, and that's exactly what Marvel wants, because this is the lead into the Morbius series, which Keating is writing. Spider-Man, you know, for some reason Whacker and the Amazing Spider-Man point ones don't really, they're not jumping on points for Spider-Man, they're launching points for other series like they did with Venom and other things like that.
I was ignoring the point one. I just forgot. Just, as long as I don't think it's there, it's cool.
I really liked Antonio Fabella's art though. Mm-hmm. I really liked it. Had a very nice European kind of feel to it. I was impressed. Like Morbius is not a character I'm a fan of, and
I only know him from the animated series.
Yeah. Oh, I remember.
Because whenever I watched that show, it was always him. Yeah. Like for I had this problem.
You were disappointed, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, there was always either that one or the one with Smythe.
You wanted like Rhino, or you wanted
Shocker.
Always got the Morbius.
I'm a big Shocker fan. I like Shocker.
Yeah.
So.
Sherlock Holmes, the Liverpool Demon, number one, is the second Sherlock Holmes miniseries from Dynamite, written by Leah Moore, who has a famous father. She's a co-writer. I'm opening it up. But they did. Yes, they did the first miniseries sometime. It was many years ago, sometimes around the time of that first Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movie. And now that Sherlock Holmes is back with two television shows and probably a third movie somewhere along the line, they've got another miniseries. This one is about Steeple Jack. What's that guy's name?
Spring Heel
Jim.
Spring Heel Jack. Remember him from
Proof.
There's a Morrissey song called Spring Heel Jim.
Well, this is Spring Heel Jack. He's a urban legend in Liverpool. So. Holmes and Watson found themselves in another case, and as they're about to leave on the train to go back to London, they get caught up in another case, and that's where we start. The art's a little wonky at times. Holmes looks a bit like Bing Crosby, but Other than that,
that's awesome. Peace on Earth. Rumpelpumpum.
Elementary.
You're a Sherlock
Wow. Holmes. What happened there?
Bing Crosby, Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. Well, if you enjoy Sherlock Holmes, you probably really enjoyed this miniseries. The last one was really good. It was a locked door mystery. Sherlock Holmes was accused of murder. But it was good.
You were hearing the sound of catharsis right now.
Oh man! So Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 9, number 16. That's like, and I know what Josh is going to say to this, whatever. But every first issue of a Buffy arc, I'm always like, this is the one. This is the one that's going to get good again.
How many issues has it been now?
Well, this is season 9, issue 16. So yeah,
years.
Yeah, it's been 6 years at least. This kind of. They've firmly introduced the vampire zombie hybrids, vampires or zompires or whatever they call them in the comic now, and there's a cop that Buffy's been working with. There's a little bit of romance interest in there, and George Jonty's back on art, and it was really good. Andrew Chambliss wrote it. But I know, like, every arc has started out like, okay, this is promising. Let's see where it goes, and then it meanders and doesn't do it for me. But I know I should drop it at some point, but I still stick with it.
So. That's the story of your life.
Yeah.
Battlefields. Josh, I think Garth Ennis needs to write a book about war, and I need to read it.
I'd be fine if Carlos Escara can draw parts of it.
Well,
I
mean that first page that's all prose about the war. He needs to write a book, a prose book.
I would totally read that.
I'll read that.
The last issue, I think that we had some issues with, just because it was a lot of recapping. But this one, right back at it.
This was great.
It was just, I know it's just great. It's just so great, and I like that we're in a different sort of spot. There's an untenable position at a hill in Korea, and it was about what the mindset of how this happens and how the people who were there are mostly going to get killed.
They all do.
And, yes, and it was really interesting, and I thought that it dealt with emotional moments in that sort of strange, stunted male soldier way that we see sometimes. It was really interesting.
This way of you know, these are up. In the same way the Fury Max dealt with it in that issue where they were all captured. It's that we got a job to do no matter how awful it is.
I've really come to like the I can't think of his name right now, the Geordi.
Mm-hmm.
Who at first it was just kind of a challenge to read his dialogue and make sense of it, but now I have it down and I read it just sort of straight out. And I like him a lot. He's a really interesting character.
It's sad it's not one more issue.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Take what we can get, man.
Yeah. I this was great.
Yeah, and Escara is just wonderful. I mean, they've worked together forever, so that's good too.
So I had pretty much dropped all the Before Watchmen titles except for Minutemen and Silk Spectre, and I can't remember if I read Before Watchmen Rorschach number 2 or not, but I saw number 3 on the racks, and the Lee Bermejo cover was so genius, I'm like, I'm going to buy it, because I thought it was great. The cover, and just so you know, the cover, it's like somebody's boot kicking through wood, and
I'm looking at it right now. It's really wonderful.
It's amazing. I love these. Yeah. So the boot is kicking through wood, and the wood is breaking, and it forms the hat and the jacket of Rorschach, and then the boot, the rubber sole of the boot print is the Rorschach. You know, the face, and it's just like, and for a second I was like, what is that? And then it, like, it's almost like a magic eye painting where you're like, your eye gets into focus, and you're like, oh, there it is, right? Which I think is just awesome. I mean, this is just a street level Rorschach story, but I found it interesting, and this is why I could go back. I want to go back and see if I read the second issue, but it's Azzarello doing Rorschach as a taxi driver.
Yeah, I read that online.
Yeah, because Rorschach goes to a diner and asks the girl out, and asks her out to a movie, and or take her to dinner, and then she turns him down, but says, "Oh, we can get dessert," or, you know, like, and it's like, oh, he's Travis Bickle.
That's awful.
Yeah, kind of.
That's awful and unnecessary and not anyway.
Yeah, so. So yeah, but that cover, whew.
It's a nice cover.
Good cover.
You know what's the problem with comics?
What?
Look at all the titles of the books we just talked about in this segment. You got long, stupid titles in all of them. You got a point one in there. A lot of hyphens.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Ugh.
Sorry. Colons, not hyphens. That's what I mean.
Nothing worse than colons.
Those are the books we want to talk about this week. You can go to fanboy.com/comics. You can make your pull list every week. You can rate and review your books. And you can also make your own pick of the week. And right now we're going to run down the top five picks of the week as chosen by the users at the time of this recording. So it might change by the time you check it out. Because I know you all check afterwards. I know I do.
Sits there staring at it like a stock ticker.
So number five would be The Massive, number seven, which came in at 1.9% of the votes. And if you know anything, you know that the first book has 1%. That means the top book is probably Batman. Number four is Conan the Barbarian, number 11, with 2.8% of the votes. That is the official FMI pick of the week. Number three, The Walking Dead 105, with 9.2%. Number two, Avengers Arena, number one, 9.3%, showing that a lot of the angst was lost after having read it. And number one, Batman 15 with 67.5% of the votes, which is low for Batman, but still
dominant.
Enough to dominate the list.
Yeah, crazy. All right, cool. So on to the user reviews. You can go to ifanboy.com/comics, and you can choose to write a review of your comics. And Markavo wrote a review of Point of Impact number 3 from Image Comics and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And at the time of this recording, 0.5% of you also made it your pick of the week. And Markavo says, "This issue is full of explanation. You're still left wondering why, but the how is yet to be explained. The next issue promises to be action-packed, as the Boone is now part of the ex-military special projects. Rafferty is convinced Boone is her murderer, and Detective Warren is now after them both. The art is terrific, and the story, despite being so simple, keeps you guessing all the way to the end. If you're happy with happy and stumped to find another great mystery read in the crime genre of Stumptown, go pick up the last three issues of Point of Impact." And yeah, I totally agree with him. I actually haven't read these. I made the decision this time to – I got all the issues. I'm going to read them all in one sitting. But I purchased all the issues, but I flipped through it, and the art, it's a wonderful black and white kind of crime art, which is really beautiful. So,
Will Magnus read To Hell You Ride number one. Gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Pick of the week is 1.3%, which I doesn't feel right, but I feel like I did it. We'll find out. Anyway, while looking for something new on the stands, I came across To Hell You Ride. Admiring the cover and curious by the title, I decided to give it a try. Talk about rolling the dice and coming up a winner. To Hell You Ride number one was an excellent read that has me excited for the next issue. Lance Henriksen, Bishop, and Joseph Madry's narration does an outstanding job setting up this mystical revenge story based on the violation of a Native American sacred burial ground and one man's journey to understand his place in it all. Story is well constructed and engaging. The art by Tom Mandrake brings the supernatural tale to life with his textured world and haunting imagery. This first issue almost fell below my radar, and I'm so glad I picked it up. It's the perfect mix of supernatural, mystery, and horror. It makes this a must read.
0.2% is the current pick.
Yeah, that sounds more right. He really liked it.
This reviewer.
Lance
Henriksen, huh?
That's a great title, by the way. To Hell You Ride.
It is, yeah. And I noticed it every time I went through the list and I saw it on the shelf, and I was like, that sounds great. I didn't want a supernatural Western, but awesome. Yeah. Good for you.
Just give us a regular Western so Josh, me, and two other guys will buy it.
I understand the pressures of the marketplace, however.
Yeah. To Hell You Ride.
I gotta say, you know, like I see Lance Henriksen's name, and it's a deterrent more than it is an enticement.
Hey, I'd like you to say that to his face.
Yeah, he'll fuck you up.
He seems like a very thoughtful gent.
To Hell You Ride. He's really into MMA.
Really?
No, I don't know.
I'm glad that was the acronym you went with.
It could have gone a lot worse.
To Hell You Ride.
Let's do a couple of emails. The first email is from Peter T, and Peter writes and says, "A few weeks ago, I picked up The Amazing Spider-Man 698, and during the big reveal, I felt a little cheated. How did I do it? Not telling. It felt in the moment like lazy writing, especially given that so few issues left to go, there was a good chance this was how we were going to get our new superior Spider-Man. Then issue 699 came out, and it was explained in a way that not only makes sense, but looking back, you could tell they were building to this moment for a lot longer than I gave them credit for. Then I picked up the new Thunderbolts, and like Ron, I was annoyed at the lack of continuity or reasons for why this team exists. But then I thought, well, wait, there's no way they won't cover Ross's reasoning to create the team, probably through some flashback scene, either in the middle of or as he walks away from a heated verbal battle with his new teammates. And with the Punisher Warzone not yet wrapped, isn't there a chance they may explain away the eye patch and the playoff beard? And as long as it eventually leads to a comic with a splash page of Deadpool, the Punisher and Venom spraying bullets, doesn't really matter how they got there. I guess my question is, in the medium of ongoing storytelling and ever-evolving worlds, is there such a thing as a plot hole or a continuity error? Should we just roll with it?"
Well, and that's the eternal debate. I mean, and I can guess that probably both you and Josh are going to say just roll with it. Who cares? It's the story or whatever. But if you're coming to the board a fan of the universe as I am, I'm a fan of the Marvel universe. Like what attracted me to it was that continuity and that shared universe. And the thing is that like I can go with a story as much as anybody can, but it's got to be within reason. It's got to be within some, you know, some level of like for example, like Nova is a great example. We just on Friday I spoke to Jeff Loeb on the Marvel press conference, and he's talking about the new Nova series. You know, they introduced that character a year ago, and then he was in AVX, and they did the digital comic, and now they're coming back around to doing this series, and they're going to go back to before we first were introduced to him. So the continuity is all over the place already. But like, I don't care because I just want to see, I love Nova and I want to hear more about it. And okay, and as long as there's some semblance of trying to make it make sense. But in the Marvel Universe, I feel like you've got to at least try to make it make sense. I think Thunderbolts is egregious. I disagree with Spider-Man. I know, and Josh and I talked about this last week on the show, but I thought Spider-Man 698, 699 have been great for my money as far as Spider-Man goes. And I get that the complaint about 698, but I'm okay with going with it. But Thunderbolts, it was just like, it was just no regard for on every character level. So
I think I can see that point of view and I understand it. But I think the audience will forgive a lot if the story is really good. I think once if the story is not really good, then you start to focus on the little things. I think and from what I've heard, and I didn't read Thunderbolts, but from what I heard, it wasn't very good. So there's nothing left to but.
Right. But the reason why it wasn't very good. I mean, the thing was that Thunderbolts was Red Hulk, Punisher, Deadpool, Venom templates that were there. And right.
That's how team books usually work anyway.
I know, but what made it not very good was that, at least for me, what made it not good, like it was written fine. The story made sense. And I thought, you know, Red Hulk, General Ross was going around recruiting people and that made sense and, you know, whatever. But what made it not good was the disregard for who these characters are, where they were right before this and all that sort of thing. You know, I don't think they're going to explain away the eye and the beard on Punisher. Just like, oh, here's the Punisher. And that you're expected to just roll with it. And that's the point of the number one. And I get that. I'm just choosing not to play because of it. So
fair enough.
Yeah,
I just think you're gonna win sometimes, you're gonna not.
Exactly
Yeah. I mean and it depends on what the book is, and if you sort of know more about the forces behind everything, you know, it'll make more sense to you. I yep. think, you know, if you think about, well Greg Rucka did this Punisher book that was kind of off the radar, and he went and he did his own thing, and you know, that's really that book is really the one that was off the reservation, not the Thunderbolts book.
Right.
Really. And honestly, if I'm a fan of that Punisher book and one of the eight people still reading it, you know, I don't want them to tie it into Thunderbolts at the end. That's going to be shitty.
Yeah.
But that's my point of view. Your point of view is different. You want to see a splash pool of Deadpool and Venom shooting. You know, that's not what I want, but that's you're a different kind of fan. That's fine.
And they have different approaches. I mean, it makes perfect sense. It's like, okay, like I get the common thread across all those characters, and I think, you know, like Thunderbolts and General Thunderbolt Ross / Red Hulk is a good fit. Like, I get it all, and that's what they're choosing to do, and that's fine. I just don't, you know, I don't need to play with it.
Now, in the short term, you know, dude said Amazing Spider-Man 698 and was like, this doesn't make sense. And like, you gotta have some patience there,
exactly,
man. They're gonna leave some breadcrumbs. Longer term, you know, what's in the freaking closet? I don't know.
Yeah. All right, so our next email comes from Alex, who says, "While I know that everyone and their great Aunt Harriet has a Batman story squirreled away in their brains to be used when they finally achieve their great desire of becoming a comic book writer, I'm constantly wondering how to become another kind of writer. I want to write about comic books, like all the fine folk at iFanboy. How does one, in this digitally mad world, get an opportunity to be a contributor for a comic-centric website? Sure, I know the easy answer would be to start your own website and write about whatever you like, but as far as getting to write for an established and respected site, how does one go about being considered a contributor? I'm sure the last thing any of you guys want is to have your email inboxes swamped with unwanted writing samples and resumes. So is there a professional protocol for submitting candidacy or a possible writer, either paid or unpaid? Thanks for your time."
Run! Run! Run!
You're right. I do not want my inbox to look like that.
Too late.
That is correct. I know. You know what? What you just said, the easy answer, that's the answer. And the thing is, it's not just that. And that's the thing that people don't get. They go, oh, I write stuff and nobody reads it. Well, good. You have to write. You have to be good at it. And you have to say things that are, A, good enough to get noticed. And then you also have to go out there, network, and market yourself to get noticed. We are not – we're not hiring, just as a rule. And if we do, it's usually people we know. It's people we have a relationship with. So somebody who just writes us – you know, it probably doesn't have a very good chance. And I'm guessing that's the way that it works for a lot of people, because these are sort of small, tight-knit groups. There ain't a lot of cash in it, if any, for most people. And you got to do it for fun, and you want to have a certain kind of aesthetic. So, you know, how do you do it? Well, you work your butt off. You create something unique. Either that might come from your voice, that might come from your approach, that might come from the access you get or the relationships you have. And it takes a really long time. And, you know, if that's something that's important to you, it can be done if you have the tenacity and the talent. That's my take.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's all accurate. I think people who have been discovered a lot, there are different ways for people to get discovered. Some people start a blog that hardly anybody reads, but it's good. And eventually someone finds it and they go, that guy's good, and they hire him. Most people we've brought on, people we've known, either personally or people who have done a really good job in the being part of the community, being smart and funny writers in the comments, or people who've done their own stuff and we've noticed it and liked it.
But that was so also when it was a much smaller community.
No, I know, yeah. But the point is there's many different ways it's happened, but it all boils down to they were good writers.
Yeah, but nobody has ever sent me, here's a sample I did, will you hire me? Because there's too many of that, and right. they don't stand out. So that doesn't usually work. But you're not going to, it's just like comics. You're not going to get anywhere unless you start doing it by yourself first.
Yeah,
it's exactly the same in that.
Yeah, we did it by ourselves for 5 years with no audience.
Yeah, with nobody caring and at all, and even though that was like the nascent kind of blogosphere and that sort of thing. I mean, kind of what happens at least for me is that like I generally like I've yet to get somebody send something in and be like, oh my god, this is the next great comic media writer, because that doesn't exist. But you know, but what it is, I've looked at people who I like I've looked at their writing elsewhere and. And part of it, and you know, Josh kind of mentioned this, is interacting with the community, right? You know, it's setting up a Blogspot or setting up a Tumblr and writing reviews and then just tweeting them out doesn't really do it. You know what I mean? Like, what if
a creator retweets that one? Then right. They've surely made it,
right? Yeah, no, I mean, that's not part of the game. You know, and part of the game is interacting with some of the other media people, not being a dick. Not that people are dicks, but I'm just saying. But like, you know, becoming known, a known thing. So when people hear your name, it's not like, oh, you know, like it's some recognizable. And if you look at the people who have written for us or the people who write for other sites and stuff like that, and if you follow all of us on Twitter, you see there's kind of a, you know, a, I don't want to say camaraderie, but there's a community
pseudo
there.
Community.
There's a pseudo community that is not closed off. Anybody can be a part of it. You know, like it's not. You know,
here's the thing. Ron and I were actually talking about this when we first we're gonna go back. We were going to San Diego for years, but for a while we had no idea what we were talking about.
No idea.
And the thing is that while comics is a very small niche and there's actually not a huge audience for most of it, it is very specific. It's and there's a lot to know about it. And if you don't understand the whole, it can make it hard to write about it and sound like you know what you're talking about. So my advice would be to talk about things that you feel confident that you know about. A lot of people write about the industry from a fan perspective. They don't know a lot about it, and they come off sounding ignorant.
Yeah.
So I would say take it slow in terms of here's what I think and blah blah blah. You know. Look at it objectively. Step back. Your passion is good, but when people write with passion about comics, sometimes that passion gets misdirected.
Yeah. And the other thing I was going to say too is that while we're not hiring and sending us something, that doesn't mean that other sites aren't. And if you look around, there you know, comic websites and comic blogs and comic podcasts now, for better or for worse, are somewhat a dime a dozen. They're popping up everywhere. And so there are many, many sites out there who while aren't CBR, iFanboy, Newsarama, you know, IGN, whatever the sites that are out there, there's other people who were essentially us, you know, 6 years ago, who are trying to get to that level and they need help. And so go look to see what sites, you know, do a Google search for comic book and see if are they posting regularly? Are they giving good thought of it? Do you like what you're reading? And all that sort of thing. And maybe, that I was going to make a Grease reference, but I won't. when the principal's addressing everybody, maybe out there there's another young Richard Nixon, or like maybe out there there's another iFanboy that we haven't even met yet. So, you know, so yeah.
You do have to, I think you have to bring something to it that is new.
Yeah,
that is unique. That is you and nothing else. And that's going to be, you know, and hope that's appealing. And also understand it will not be appealing to everybody. You know, yeah. There's lots of people who like what I write about, and there's lots of people who don't, and that they like what Connor writes about.
Be careful, because everyone that works in the comic book industry is very, choose my words wisely,
I want to know what you're going to say.
Very aware of what is being said about them, and whether they choose to react publicly or privately, they have reactions. And there are, you know, and if you go, if you write this great anti-Jeff Loeb rant that, you know, and everybody's like, oh, it's hysterical, he totally sick burned him or whatever. Good chance Jeff, it's going to cross Jeff Loeb's plate, and a good chance when you get to the point where you get to interview Jeff Loeb, he's not going to want to talk to you.
Or Marvel.
Yeah, or Marvel at all. Yeah, which has happened, which we, you know, like, not Marvel. I mean, I don't want to give any specific people or publishers or anything like that, but there have been cases with publishers and writers where, because of the way people have dealt with stuff, they're just like, we don't want to do business with you, which is their prerogative, you know.
Well, it doesn't mean you shouldn't criticize things. Just mean
no, yeah, no, you'd be smart about it. Be smart about
it. Do it in a fair way. I think at the end of the day, though, it's just, you have to be good. Especially with so many different options, you have to be good. And if you're good, most likely you'll get found by somebody somewhere. You start climbing up the ladder of sites, but you have to be good. There's a lot of people out there who, and I'm not joking this at Alex because I don't know Alex, but a lot of people think they're good. They're not.
Yep.
You got to be good.
Yep. Agreed. Cool. So you
might not be good for a while. Forever.
Yeah.
So you can send all of your writing samples to josh@ifanboy.com, and he'll be happy to critique and give you feedback, and maybe
run.
Ifanboy.com. send us email to contact@ifanboy.com with questions, not writing samples. On to the voicemail. Our first voicemail has got a question that is near and dear to my heart.
Hey, my name's Jared. I'm from California. I was calling in regards to the closet. I think I might have figured it out. I'm rereading Avengers 26 by Bendis and Malieve right now, and I don't think it's a closet. I think Scarlet Witch, I hope this is the closet you guys are always talking about. Anyways, I think Scarlet Witch refers to the fact that her Aunt Agatha is sleeping, and then her and Barton hook up, and then he walks over, and I think it's the doorway to another room of the house, and he wants to check to see if Aunt Agatha's there, but he's too scared to, because if she's there, then he's going to be even more wigged out. Anyways, hope that helps. But
well, that's a theory. Certainly a theory. Yeah, Josh, you want to explain? Because every time we talk about the closet on the show, which has been a lot lately because it's fun, there's at least three or four people in the comments or on Twitter asking what the hell we're talking about. So why don't we, for once and for all, explain what it is.
Explain the story of the closet.
I'm going to try. It's been a really long time, and it's at this point where it's like a legend. So let me try to get through it, and then they'll tell me what I said wrong about it. Clint Barton was killed ostensibly in Brian's Bendis's first take on the Avengers Disassembled, and he said not like this, but like this. That's the part that gets lost. And then they brought him back, and he woke up, and he was in. Was he in Latveria?
No. Well, no, yeah. Say so then Scarlet Witch said no more mutants, and it became House of M. And in the House of M world, Hawkeye was there. And then when House of M ended and everything got put back to the normal universe, House of M Hawkeye was in the Marvel universe, and somehow he ended up on Wundagore Mountain and met a young girl, not young girl, but he met a woman named Wanda, who was clearly the Scarlet Witch, but had no memory of being the Scarlet Witch and was just living with her Aunt Agatha, and then they hooked up. And
so
at the end of that issue, and I got to dig it up, I got to find it.
Yeah, no, you remember more than I do, but wait, before we, are you saying that this Hawkeye is not our Hawkeye? He's the House of M Hawkeye?
Correct.
Whoa!
But the theory behind that is, Hawkeye didn't, because the whole attack on Avengers Disassemble was Scarlet Witch driven, that when he said not like this and went to the thing, he didn't actually die. He just kind of, Scarlet Witch made everybody think he died, and then when it flipped over to House of M world, House of M Hawkeye was just Hawkeye in the House of M.
So we've been walking around Hawkeye. Going, why are you all acting so weird?
Yeah. But
why are you
but,
old, Captain America?
But the thing is, my understanding was that when House of M reset, it was House of M Hawkeye. It wasn't like he was just back to being Clint Barton. It was like, you know what I mean? Like at the end of that issue, there was some reference to what was behind this door, and we've called it a closet. I have thought similarly to the same thought that Jared has, which is that, you know, we don't know for sure it's a closet. I got to dig up the issue. It might just be a door, but
I thought Clint was gay. No. I got all this wrong.
And so I've had the similar thought that maybe it's just the door. But the thing was is that Bendis clearly was doing something with House of M Hawkeye in the normal Marvel universe and something with this door and just kind of never finished it. And so then from there, as a joke once during an interview, I just said, New Avengers 26, what's behind the door? And he laughed it off and he's like, ah, you'll find out, or like he kind of played it off. And then over the years, one thing, and Josh and Connor can attest to this, I can be a persistent, stubborn motherfucker. And so I then decided, every time I talk to Bendis, I'm going to ask about the closet, whether we're talking about Avengers or not.
Why don't you reverse the roles and see how you would feel if somebody did that to you every time?
I know. But my whole thing is that I believe, you know, and in an interview at C2E2 a couple years ago, he actually said it was meant to be like the briefcase in Pulp Fiction.
But that has to be brought up again. It has to be the briefcase in Pulp Fiction is a MacGuffin that leads to a story. The story didn't go anywhere.
Right. Agreed. Exactly. So whether you believe Bendis or not, I believe that there was a story there that he never got to, and I just want to know what it was and what's behind the door, and that's why I keep asking.
Well, I mean, and we talked about it a lot. We never let it go.
Yeah.
Before you got to Bendis.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That was really the origin, and then talking to bringing Bendis into it was really just having fun with it. So. Yeah.
Really, though, what is in there?
I know, right? Don't you want to know?
Yes!
So, anyway.
We're not fucking around here.
Not fucking around at all. We're not fucking around at all. So give us a call. Leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. iFanboy Don't Miss is another podcast that we do where we talk to creators about books that are coming out around the holidays. Schedule gets a little wonky, but go subscribe to it in iTunes and go to iFanboy.com every Monday to check out that new episode.
Yeah, there's also the Make Comics podcast, which didn't happen this week. I'm sorry about that, but there'll be another one next week. I have no excuse for you.
But subscribe to it on iTunes. You can find it on iFanboy.com.
It's two swings and misses, huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
It's the holidays. It's rough. Well, but don't miss. I'll tell you after the show.
Oh, it was like that. Yeah. I just had pick of the week. I didn't have time to do it that day, and then the other it gets away from you. But it's me and Andy Schmidt, and we talk about how to make comics. And we got a good batch of them on the way that you will get. It's just not as regular as I would like. I'm sorry. You're cool.
We are rapidly approaching the holidays. They are much quicker than I would like them to be coming. But as we get there, I'd like to keep you abreast of the schedule. This show comes out December 16th. The next week's show, December 23rd, will be the last pick of the week of the year. The week after that, December 30th, will be the all-media year-end wrap-up that we'd like to do. And then the week after that will be the return of the Pickley podcast. So there'll be 1 week off in the middle. That's fine because there's no official books coming out that week anyway. So there's nothing to talk about, even if we did the show. As it is, we like to get away from each other as much as possible. So it's good for us. It's a little break from us, from each other.
Which is healthy.
Yeah. In the meantime, you can go to fanboy.com. You can read Josh's Pick of the Week review, and you will be able to read the new Book of the Month review next month. And also all the big news and stuff that's coming out. We have a bunch of Best of the Year lists coming out after Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's, and then a little bit after New Year's. So if you want to know what we thought of the year in comics, that'll be happening almost every day between Christmas and New Year's and a little bit after. In addition to that, you can go to fanboy.com/about. You can see the staff page. You can find our social network links and be our friend online. And you can follow all the action on twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy.
And as I mentioned earlier, you can get in touch with us. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can call our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. It's always good to hear from you, especially around the holidays. So thanks to everybody who's reached out with holiday wishes.
You just love Christmas.
I do. I just fucking love it.
It's great. It's the best time of the year.
If you like the podcast or the other podcasts, that you can leave a review at iTunes. It's a really good way to help get notice out there. In the meantime, tell other people about it. Help spread the word. Share it on social media. Comment on the shows. Do what you will. Thank you very much for doing so. And that's all. You are the marketing and advertising arm of iFanboy. You right there listening to this right now. So you need to do your part.
We appreciate it. Cool.
But get moving.
So it's less than 2 weeks till Christmas. Are you guys ready?
So I don't know that I'm actually going to make it to New York at this point.
Yeah, I know. I'm happy I'm getting in early.
So there's that. Keep that in mind.
Well, then you wouldn't be able to leave, so there's that too.
Yeah. Well, it has lots of complications, let's just say, if I can't make it home for Christmas. So we'll just see how that goes.
All right. Well, good luck with that.
It might be a whiskey Christmas.
Yeah.
You should get a motorcycle.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. It'd be a Fonzie Christmas.
Maybe I'll just try.
That's not where I was going with that, but that's also good.
That works.
Yeah, it's not wrong. Don't jump. Don't take any jumps, though.
Yeah, don't jump over a shark.
I did drive from L.A. to New York in two nights before. Maybe I'll do that again.
It's doable. It's totally doable. So.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
All right, so good luck with that, Connor. Until next time.
Aging hipster dead in Minnesota.
Holiday tragedy is...
Why did I go north?
Why did you go north?
Yeah, why did I go north?
He's not good with directions.
Holiday tragedy is...
Like, what happened was you fell asleep and then ended up going the wrong way.
I'm starting basically at the bottom of the country.
The seat next to you is broken.
I'm adding like 3 days going north. It's crazy, Josh.
Anyway, so until next time, I'm Ron.
Connor.
I'm Del Griffin.
Plus, the gas is so much more expensive now than the last time I drove across the country.
Oh, geez, it's like the cost of a plane ticket.
Tolls, too. When we come, every child must be made aware. Every child must be made to care. Care enough for his fellow man to give all the love that he can. I pray my wish will come true. It's for my child and your child too. He'll see the day of glory. I pray my day when men of good will live in peace again. Peace on earth. Can it be? Can it be? It's a pretty thing, isn't it? This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.